welcome to Maintaining Priority, episode number 2. My name is Joe Marucci, your host. Tonight I'm going to be doing something a little bit different, something I didn't quite plan on, but unfortunately it seems like it's going to work out this way. I'm going to be maintaining priority for the whole podcast. We had a couple of cancellations due to people being sick, some scheduling issues, so on and so forth. So I wasn't going to go another week or 2 weeks without a podcast. So as of right now, I'm holding it all on my own. All right, so this week in Magic, we had some Twitter news. Wizards of the Coast apologizes for card artwork on the card Triumph of Ferocity. The card itself, if you're unfamiliar with it, depicts Garrick holding down Liliana with one hand and raising his other hand as if he was ready to hit her. And apparently people took this as a bit of an offensive thing, especially with all of the goings-on lately in the ways of WotC's view on women and how Magic is sometimes an oppressive game is in regards to women and our attitudes. I think it was one of those things where some people were offended by the apology as well, and it might just be people are taking it a bit too far. If you're asking my opinion on the matter, I really don't. I don't mind the artwork. It's flavor-wise what they were going for. It certainly probably fit the initial description, but it could come down to looking pretty bad. I mean, Garrick's a pretty beastly-looking dude, especially in that picture. And Liliana does look rather helpless with her small little flaming red orb. Doesn't look like she's going to do much in the way of defending herself. Another thing I want to do today is go through a bit of the StarCityGames.com, the last two opens in the Legacy meta breakdown, and also taking a look at Jupiter Games and a little bit of the meta breakdown there. Things are a little bit less detailed in the ways of Jupiter Games, just because they only post top 8 and the lists. I don't know exactly how the bracket worked down. I didn't actually make it to Jupiter Games this month. I'll probably be going next month, and if not next month, definitely June. I need one more point to qualify this year for their Invitational, so I'm definitely going to be looking to get that point in the coming future here. All right, so took a look at some of the different cards that I've been seeing a fair amount of play lately. Them being Delver of Secrets, Snapcaster Mage, Legacy Mainstay Tarmogoyf, Lightning Bolt, and for the sheer giggles of it, Brainstorm. In Birmingham, there were 20 copies of Delver of Secrets in the top 16, 14 copies of Snapcaster Mage, 11 copies of Tarmogoyf, 20 copies of Lightning Bolt, and a whopping 44 Brainstorms in the top 16. That was actually 11 decks running the max copy of 4 copies each out of the top 16. So you were 5 decks that didn't play Brainstorm. And it's a rather easy look to figure out which decks weren't playing it. Explorer Rock, Maverick, Belcher, Maverick, and Welder Mud. So if you weren't running blue, you weren't running Brainstorm. And if you were running blue, you were running Brainstorm. Obviously, the best card in the format, hands down. Phoenix, similar breakdown. 16 Delver of Secrets. 10 Snapcaster Mage. 12 Tarmogoyf. 12 Lightning Bolt. And 36 Brainstorms. Now, some of the interesting parts that I found, anyway, personally, were the appearance by a couple of odd decks that you don't see a lot. And that would be, you got to see Elves in the top 8, High Tide in the top 8, which, you know, was the dominant deck for quite some time around the Edison, New Jersey, Star City Games era up until the printing of Metal Misstep. Saw Explorer Rock or Nick Fit also in the top 8. Dredge, Esper Stoneblade, still kind of hanging on. Let me go over some of the actual breakdown here. In the top 16 of Birmingham, there were two blue-red Delvers, and they were first and second place. People casting their lightning bolts and snapping them back. Then we also saw two copies of Hive Mind in the top 16. One copy of Bug Control, which would be like what Lewis Laskin piloted at the Grand Prix. Three copies of Rug. One copy of TES. A copy of Nick Fit. One copy of Dream Halls. Two Maverick lists. One Esper Control list. One Goblin Charbelcher list, and then one Metalworker Mud list, rounding out the top 16 in 16th place. In Phoenix, Arizona, a week previous to the Birmingham event, we saw one copy of Blue-Red Delver in top 16, one copy of Hive Mind, zero copies of Bug Control, three copies of Rug, one copy of TES, one copy of Nick Fit, two copies of Maverick. We had one Esper Control, another Goblin Charbelcher. We also saw Elves, two copies of Dredge, and one copy of High Tide, as I spoke about earlier. When you break down both top 16s and then add up the totals for them, the most popular deck out of the top 16 was Rug, with six copies in total. Second most popular was Maverick, with four copies in total. Not much of a surprise there. Probably the two most dominant decks right now in Legacy. I don't see them going anywhere unless, of course, Avacyn Restored shakes things up a little bit. I've heard some different rumblings from some Legacy players, one of which would normally be joining us on the podcast right now, but is actually recording a video with Michael Caffrey for StarCityGames.com to, I'm sure, be posted rather shortly. Other popular decks, there were three copies of Blue-Red Delver, with one in Phoenix and two in Birmingham, obviously, as I mentioned, the two one first and second placed from Birmingham, Alabama. Also, with three copies of Hive Mind, still holding on, even in the post-misstep era. The power of playing Show and Tell and just plopping down either an Emrakul or a Hive Mind, the deck's namesake, still rather popular and still rather powerful. Not everybody's prepared for it, and that's kind of, that deck and Dredge both kind of slip into that same category of, if you don't sideboard for it, or you don't have things like Spellslayer Sprite, or Daze, or some other really good way of interacting with Hive Mind, they could just get you. And I think that's what we're seeing with Hive Mind still sticking around. It's a rather powerful combo deck. The other powerful combo deck I still think is, and people don't really see it as one too much except for Matty Elias, who actually just wrote about it recently for Star City Games, and that is Dredge. Dredge right now is 100% a combo deck, with the breakneck speed of being able to go off on first turn, second turn kill you, or you know sometimes even the first turn just getting you, being able to dump your hand with Lion's Eye Diamond and Flashing Black Faithless Looting, probably also casting Faithless Looting before that. Cast Faithless Looting in response, cracking your Lion's Eye Diamond while you're maintaining priority. And then you go and you dump the rest of your hand, and then you end up flashing back the second copy of Looting, dredging four times, most likely some Golgari Grave Trolls, and dumping a whole bunch of stuff in there and going on to possibly win right from there. Also, going along that, at Jupiter Games, the top eight was first place Dredge, second place Bug Control, third place Rug, in fourth and fifth was Esper Control, Maverick coming in sixth place, the ever-present Burn deck showing up in seventh place. That's an odd little thing there. Every once in a while, you still get the Burn men that show up, as opposed to the Burn boys who, oh, well, it's Legacy, and let's just go and build something. When a man comes and pilots Burn, sometimes they just get there. And then in eighth place, rounding out with another copy of Maverick. Jupiter Games top eight. Dredge being piloted by a master of Dredge. If you guys don't know who Damon Whippy is, and you play Dredge, you probably should. The man plays it probably better than anybody else I've ever seen play that deck before. It's definitely something to watch. He's a guy that knows that deck inside and out, and you know, no matter how much you prepare for, sometimes he will just get you. Also, Hollywood, Michael Keller, I've also seen him pilot dredge. He's also quite good. Hollywood, you may know from developing many legacy decks that you'll see, especially some of the odd ones. You'll get to see his name at the top of the Magic the Gathering, the Source, MTG the Source, under a lot of different deck names, especially like things like Imperial Painter, which is a deck that I play myself, that I very much enjoy, and he wrote the primer for it, and I believe developed the deck himself with a whole lot of blasts in it, and at one point active volcanoes and many things of the sort. A fun story that I had this week was actually last weekend. I went to a place called 6 Feet Under Games, and, well, I should probably get to this later, but I'm going to go off on a tangent here for just a moment. And they held a legacy event, which they aren't exactly known for holding many legacy events, so I definitely wanted to support them. It happened to be also on the Jupiter Games weekend, and I skipped that to go down and play this legacy event. I ended up playing Armageddon Stacks, like I may have mentioned last week, and trying to chalice people on one, see if I could ride it home to victory, which unfortunately worked exactly one time out of my four rounds, and that was playing against Imperial Banner, a deck that I don't exactly expect to see in a metagame, except the fact that I should expect to see that deck in a metagame. I play the deck. The deck was, you know, rather odd. It's not something you see every day. But unfortunately, I end up finding myself on the other end of that deck entirely too many times. I once again saw myself sitting against the other end of that deck, this time piloting Stacks. And it, odd, very, very odd game. If you're familiar with Armageddon Stacks at all, it basically, it cheats on mana by playing Inchatomb, City of Traitors, Mox Diamond, and almost your entire deck is three casting costs and slightly above. You know it's an odd game when you end up going on turn three, Chalice of the Void, X equals three. So I basically shut off 90% of my deck after turn one, Chalice at one, turn two, Crucible of Worlds, turn three, Chalice on three. And it got there. He couldn't drop anything from his deck, really, that was of much consequence. And I couldn't do a whole lot. Eventually, he ended up, you know, under the Magus of the Tabernacle, paying some upkeep, and eventually ends up sacking his Blood Moon, Magus of the Moon, which came down just a little late to the party. So it must not have been turn three, but maybe it was turn four or five, with help of Mox Diamond. But odd, awkward game where I am shut off on almost my whole deck. At the end of the game, I was actually played two Magus of the Tabernacle, paying three life on upkeep to keep them both, because I had to tap an Ancient Tomb, a Horizon Canopy, and then a Mox Diamond to pay their four total upkeep, just so I could swing for four. So I was taking three and swinging for four to try to close this game out before I just died. Luckily, the guy didn't have anything like Magma Jet in his deck, or I would have been dead. So back to the Star City top 16 breakdown. First, I'm going to look at Phoenix. What I did was I went through, and I found some cards that you don't normally see or don't always see in Legacy, and I called it my spicy list. So the spicy Phoenix list, starting off with Jonathan Kornacki playing Blue-Red Delver. He played three copies of Mana Leak. Now, Mana Leak has been coming in and out of Legacy as of late. I remember playing against Ely Cassis in top four at a Jupiter Games event, and we exchanged deck lists, and I said, oh, Mana Leak, isn't that cute? And, you know, of course, knowing and then hearing Ely explain how much better it is to not need two blue for counterspell with Snapcaster Mage, and being able to use your other lands to counter spells, definitely pretty good. But it was still rather awkward to see three copies of Mana Leak and Blue-Red Delver. Also, another thing that I found interesting was Countertop by Michael Lester. All in all, the deck was interesting. There was no, like, huge surprise in that deck, except for the fact that it was just the deck itself. There was no Enlightened Tutor package. There was, you know, 3 copies of Jace, 3 copies of Lingering Souls, which Lingering Souls, we got to see how powerful that card was at the Grand Prix. 4 copies of Counterbalance, 3 Snapcaster Mage, a singleton copy of Edalkin Shackles, Brainstorm, 2 Counterspells, a Diabolic Edict, 1 Dismember, 3 Force of Will, which 3 Force of Will seems like that is becoming the new number. You don't always run 4 anymore. 3 is generally pretty good, especially with the fact that you're running 2 Spell Pierce and 2 Spell Snare, which is also rather common in most control decks these days. Storm, kind of getting beat down a little bit, except for the TES build, which can just be breakneck speed or also just, you know, plop a whole crap ton of goblins on you, just like Goblin Charbelcher. At which point, the Counterbalance deck is actually pretty well positioned against all those decks anyway, just being able to slam down a Counterbalance, and most likely you're gonna hit something along the way, unless, of course, Force of Will sitting at the top. But against things like TES, Spell Snare hits a lot, Spell Pierce hits a lot, Swords of Plowshares, otherwise a dead card, still hits a lot. Edict hits a lot, Counterspell hits a lot. Brainstorm means that you're going to get anything out of your hand and put it back on there and still counter things with Counterbalance. Jace, of course, puts you way ahead in almost any matchup where you can actually end up brainstorming with it. Sometimes almost just out of a Brainstorm alone. A 4-mana Brainstorm, unfortunately, sometimes is enough in Legacy. But yeah, that deck came in 11th place in Phoenix. Thought the deck itself was rather nice. I played some Countertop in my day, and I definitely like seeing that out there. Another interesting, spicy thing that we saw was Jason Bulkowski. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. Chances are he's not going to listen anyway, so it's fine. Out of the sideboard, out of Dredge, 4 Grindstone, 4 Painter Servant, 4 Enlightened Tutor. Now, there was somebody else, I believe, the week previous that also ran Dredge with a Transformation sideboard into Grindstone Painter. It's still really odd to see that combination. I would really love to know what people are taking out and what are they bringing to bring in that package. Are there places where they don't bring in the package? I would assume there is. But that's just a really odd, fun thing. I mean, I love playing Painter Grindstone myself. But that combination out of Dredge, it's definitely something you're probably sideboarding wrong against. Another card that I saw too was the Nick Fit deck by Chris Higashi. 1 Master of the Wild Hunt. Everything else seemed pretty much standard, but the Master of the Wild Hunt, not something you see every day. Saw a lot of it during Cube. We're in Cube Week, which I'll get to in a little bit. I like the card a lot. I don't know if it's any better than the Deranged Hermit, but, you know, it's definitely, it's spicy, it's cool, it makes a whole lot of wolves. You know, you can kill John Finkel with it, I'm pretty sure, because it makes a wolf. Maybe, I don't know. John Finkel, cheers to you. All right, continuing on. One thing I also did want to say is, from my perspective, because that's how little deviation there was and how little, you know, spicy, cool cards that I got to see from Phoenix. Phoenix probably actually has a halfway decent sized, or, you know, enough people that are driving or flying in on the West Coast to play this event. It's probably a pretty well-developed metagame. A lot of times if you have an underdeveloped metagame, you get to see a lot of awkward cards or a lot of fun cards. And that, you know, that's where a lot of innovation sparks from, is from, you know, some place where the metagame might not be completely developed, but they might do something really, really cool. Like somebody might play Guided Passage, which I know some people have been talking about lately. A friend of mine told me a couple of months ago, Guided Passage, that card has to be Legacy playable. I dismissed it immediately because the card goes and you reveal your entire deck. You just go play this card. It's rug colors. You pay a blue, a red, and a green. Guided Passage. Reveal the cards in your library to an opponent. Reveal the cards in your library. An opponent I should read Oracle. Reveal the cards in your library. An opponent chooses from among them a creature card, a land card, and a non-creature non-land, and you put the chosen cards into your hand, then shuffle your library. So you just get a massive card advantage there. If you play it in the right sort of deck, there will be no bad Guided Passage ever. You're just going to get a whole bunch of good cards, and your opponent's going to go, oh man, did I just really give you a Blood Raid Elf so you can go and do this again? Yeah, you probably did. So cards like that are something that you get to see in, you know, either at a slightly underdeveloped metagame or just, you know, somebody playing around, tinkering around with some things. It's something that you would definitely see out of Doug McKay. Doug McKay, definitely a very good deck builder that plays in the Northeast. He was the guy that originally developed the Blue-Red Delver list, even though other people were kind of giving credit for it. Doug McKay definitely did it first. Go back and check. Go through Jupiter Games deck lists. You'll see Doug play that one at least a good solid month before anybody else played that deck. So on to the Birmingham event. Maverick by Caleb Krotz. He played the Elish Norn, or I'm sorry, the Loyal Retainers package with 3 Fauna Shaman, 1 Elish Norn, which we got to see a little. I believe the week before the previous list ran a splash of blue, ran Loyal Retainers, and I don't know if Elish Norn was in there. Not 100% sure. I'd have to double check that one, but that's definitely, it's still interesting. I love seeing a card like Loyal Retainers seeing some play. Loyal Retainers definitely a very powerful card. Very rare card, very expensive card, does some really cool things, and to see that in a Maverick list, you know, it's definitely something that's not the norm, but could end up being that way, and that's the things that we get by either people playing with things or an underdeveloped meta. Also, Zach Hicks played Welder Mud, a deck also that I very much enjoyed playing. Pretty much if it involves City of Traders and Ancient Tomb, I'm into the deck. There's just no two ways about it. I love playing things that cheat on mana really, really early in the game. And he played a card that I love to play in Imperial Painter, which is Blood Moon. Granted, it's 2 copies. He also played some Lotus Petals, so it, you know, possible first turn Blood Moon get you. I don't know how much I love it in that deck. I'm not exactly, I don't feel like I'm in love with that selection, but it's definitely something that's spicy. No two ways about it. That is one spicy way to go. Something that goes against the Blood Moon plan that he also played was Hall of the Bandit Lord. Now, Hall of the Bandit Lord from Champions of Kamigawa, one of the most fun blocks in Magic, and don't let anybody else ever tell you otherwise. Hall of the Bandit Lord enters the battlefield tapped, so you're not going to get to use it right away. But tap it, pay 3 life, add 1 mana to your mana pool. If that mana was spent on a creature spell, it gains haste. Now, in a mud deck, haste could mean a lot. If you go and you haste out a metal worker, he's going to do his damage. That's, you know, it's could just be over just off of that metal worker. If you aren't at all familiar with metal worker mud or Welder Mud, and, you know, even just a hasted Goblin Welder could also do some damage too. But if you're not familiar at all with that deck, can you actually... No. Can't haste a Goblin Welder with that. But you can still haste a Metalworker, because it is colorless mana. I just read it. I should have realized that. But you can go and haste a Blightsteel Colossus. You could haste a Forge Master, a Lodestone Golem, a Metalworker, a Sundering Titan, or a Wormcoil Engine. Hello, smash your face, you're dead. Just about any one of those coming down hasted could just very well kill you. Now, granted, Lodestone Golem, it definitely has to be falling out of favor a little bit, especially with the sheer number of lightning bolts that are being, you know, flung around. That's also, though, kind of the reason that the Hall of the Bandit Lord is actually really, really cool, just because Metalworker dies because he's a 1-2. He dies to just about anything. He dies to, like, basically a fork bolt. But, sorry about that. But if he comes down hasted and you reveal, you know, 3 artifacts at hand, just 3, that's 6 mana. 6 mana, play my Wormcoil, burn my Metalworker all you want. because I'm going to get that life. And you're probably not going to even burn the metal worker then. It's probably just going to sit there, and it's going to probably end up getting equipped to something crazy. The deck also, Zach also played a Staff of Domination. Staff plus, you know, worker can just be game. You just have so much mana, draw at your deck, win. You know, it could just be over. Another card that he played too was Trash for Treasure. It's two colorless and a red sorcery, rare from Mirrodin, the original Mirrodin. And it's, as an additional cost to cast Trash for Treasure, sacrifice an artifact. Return target artifact from your graveyard to the battlefield. And you can get all sorts of shenanigans going on there. It's almost like another copy of the Goblin Welder, except it's in a sorcery speed. Could sometimes be better, you know, of course, depending on, you know, the turn and how that goes. But another cool card that you got to see splashed in there. The sideboard had Culling Scales, which is also a really neat card to have in there, too. And a great card for that deck. At the beginning of your upkeep, destroy target non-land permanent with the lowest converted mana cost. If two or more permanents are tied for the lowest cost, target any one of them. You're always going to have the highest mana cost thing out on the battlefield, pretty much. Especially in current Legacy, where people are just playing so many small guys and just trying to kill you rather quickly. So that was another card, too, that was also rather fun to see. Definitely a lot of spicy stuff in that Metalworker Mud List by Zach Hicks in 16th place. Bug Control also showed up in that top 16, 4th place by Tony Chu. Now, granted, this card was in Nick Spagnuolo's list, but Nick Spagnuolo's list looked a lot like Lewis Laskin's list from the Grand Prix, and this was not in Lewis Laskin's list, which was Dread of Night. Two copies in the sideboard. Another card that's really, really neat, and it's always fun to see neat cards. Dread of Night, if you're not familiar with it, is an enchantment for one black. White creatures get -1/-1. Boom. Done. Mother of Runes, dead. Lingering Souls tokens, dead. Many, many things, dead. Now, Knight of the Reliquary, not dead. But all of his friends, dead. Avon Mind Censor, dead. Thalia, dead. So, I mean, that's definitely a card that is aimed right for Maverick. Really, really cool card, though. Glad to see that one seeing some play. Originally printed in Tempest, and then brought back in 6th edition. So that card's out there. It's a rather cheap card. Star City Games has a total of 4 copies in stock right now. 4 SP Tempest. So if you want to play that deck, you probably want to get them. Just buy all 4. Do yourself a favor. You're probably never going to use 4. It's always nice to have a playset. At least that's the way I go. If you're going to go and get it, go get it. Another rather spicy, different thing that we got to see was Jared Webb playing Dream Halls. Jared was in 8th place. Another rather fun deck to play. Another deck that gets to cheat with show and tell. And just play the namesake, Dream Halls. I'm not going to play Hive Mind here. You're going to play Dream Halls. 5 mana enchantment. So you're only cheating a little bit, but you're still cheating enough. And you're not playing a fair deck. Okay? You're not playing a fair deck. But the cards that I thought that were really, really spicy, and I was really happy to see, were Army of the Damned, which is a rather new card. You have an Innistrad card. Put 13 2/2 black zombie creature tokens onto the battlefield tapped, and flashes back for 10, which you're probably never flashing back. I don't think you have to worry in that deck about flashing it back ever. But you have so much that pitches to make that happen, because you're playing 4 Conflux, 4 Cruel Ultimatums. You're also playing 4 Progenitus, and those would all just go and boom, putting down 26 power. Go. As long as you have Dream Halls in play. I don't think that card gets played without Dream Halls in play. Another spicy card in the list too was Temporal Manipulation. And if you didn't know, that's Time Walk at 5 mana. It is it's no Temporal Mastery. Who knows though? Maybe Jared here was, you know, hedging his bet or saying, hey, I'm probably going to go to this in the future. Let's try it out now. We'll just go to this open. I'll just run temporal manipulation. I'll get some people with that. Granted, the chances are the deck, when it's going through the maneuvers, is probably never playing either of those two cards unless it's situationally good. You know, most of the time you're just going to go and you're going to play your Confluxes. You're going to get your cruel ultimatums and just kill somebody. But it's there if you need it. It's another one of those decks where it's combo control, you know, and sometimes you'll play that control role. Most of the times, probably not. But you still have Force of Will, you have Daze, you have Brainstorm, you have Intuition to set up your win, and you just get to do a whole lot of unfair things eventually and win the game. So that's pretty much my breakdown in the current Legacy meta. I'm personally finding myself in some place where I don't know exactly what to play right now. It's an interesting world that we live in right now. You should pretty much just be playing Rug or playing Maverick, which I like playing Green-White, but I'm not a big fan of the current Maverick build. It's not really exciting to me. Just slamming a turn 2 Thalia and hopefully riding its back to victory and making your Green Sun Zenith a little bit worse. I'm not a fan of it, but those are probably the two best decks right now. I would probably be more inclined to play Dredge. I'm more of a combo player at heart. I like playing Ad Nauseam Tendrils, but I don't play TES. I don't have the cards to play TES. As funny as that kind of sounds, I don't have Burning Wishes and things like that. Well, I guess it's pretty much just the Burning Wishes, so I could just go and buy some Burning Wishes and play TES. But I never really liked that build. I much prefer the Aurelax build on Ad Nauseam Tendrils. Being able to ponder, preordain, brainstorm your way to guaranteeing turn 3-4, I much prefer than, you know, the almost all-in feel of TES. If I was Brian Cook, obviously TES would be the way to go. But he knows what he's doing with that, and it's a different deck, despite what your friends might tell you. And no deck is necessarily head and shoulders above the other. They're just two different decks that kill in sometimes a remarkably the same way. Like TES, despite the fact that it's the Epic Storm and not Ad Nauseam is much better than the Ad Nauseam deck because of things like Chrome Mox. But that's, you know, like I said, it's just one of those choice things, and I'm choosing to not play that deck. The advantage that deck has right now in the metagame, though, is the fact that it does go off so early, and with the lack of Force of Wills, if you can go off on turn one, you know, chances are you're in pretty good shape. Also, we're not seeing nearly as much Stoneforge Mystic right now, which Stoneforge Mystic, although not ideal, sometimes slightly can race, you know, the 10 goblins, 8 goblins. Granted, you know, you prop down 12 on turn 1, it's not racing that. But the TS, definitely far better position right now in the metagame than Ad Nauseam Tendrils. So that's kind of why I kind of lost my way as far as right now in the current meta. I'll figure something out sooner or later. I might just go back to playing Astral Slide for a bit, which is a deck that I've tinkered with off and on, and in going over my remaining spoiler cards, I'll hit on one card there that excites me a lot for that deck. And, might as well get into it right now. So, remaining cards that excite me going into Legacy. I'm sorry. I forgot. I left off the rest of my list of Birmingham Spicy cards. I forgot, holy forgot that there was a second page. Maverick by Todd Anderson. Linvala, Keeper of Secret, or Keeper of Silence, and 2 Fauna Shaman. So he's making his nod towards the Fauna Shaman build, and he has Linvala. He doesn't have the Loyal Retainers package, but Linvala, also rather cool card. Definitely neat to see that one in Legacy. Out of sideboard, he had 2 more Linvalas. He also had a Gideon Jura, which I know Brian Kibler recently said that he's been happy to kill in every format with Gideon Jura now when he was playing, I believe he was playing a Maverick list. And so that was really, you know, another neat card to see. And also another card that can be got by Fauna Shaman in Todd Anderson's sideboard was Dauntless Escort. So you bring in your Wraths, Todd's going to go and bring in Dauntless Escort and make his stuff indestructible and survives that turn. And then in the Rug Delver list by James Kingsley, he ran three Tarmogoyfs and one Mayor of Avabruk. I'm assuming, I could be wrong, that his Mayor was his fourth Tarmogoyf. Not quite a Tarmogoyf, but also something that you don't see that often. Who knows? Maybe he normally borrows one. It was a really easy way to proxy it and just ran it in the tournament. But, hey, the guy top 16'd. James, where are you here, James? He has 15th place. So he picked himself up some points and a couple of bucks cash and ran some Mayor of Avabruk in Legacy. Cool for him. All right, done with the spicy stuff, done with my current opinion. Moving on to the cards. All right, I'm going to start with white. White, the cards that I liked, I'm going to start with the one that I liked for like an Astral Slide-like deck. Granted, it's not going to be winning anything anytime soon, but it's still a lot of fun to play. It was something I enjoyed playing a lot in Old Extended. And I pull it out on occasion and have some fun with it. I would play Cathedral Sanctifier in a heartbeat in that deck. He's a 1/1 white mana, 1/1. When he enters the battlefield, you gain 3 life. Now, granted, Kitchen Finks, a whole lot better. Because then you do things like block, slide it out, comes back, doesn't have the counter on it anymore, you already gain 4 life. But the ability to come down and gain 3 life right away, I think could make a lot of difference for that deck. Now, you need to be able to survive long enough to get your Astral Slide online. And then once you get your Slide online, it's hard to beat for most decks, especially because they just usually let it go. Play Astral Slide, then. Sure. Astral Slide, you know, I'm going to slide out your best guy. Oh, yeah. And then, like, Cathedral Sanctifier or something like Kitchen Finks goes and, you know, it negates a Nimble Mongoose pretty quickly. So I was really happy to see that card. I'm going to try that card out, see where it goes. No big promises and no promises out of that deck. But I enjoy the heck out of playing it, and I'm going to keep playing it off and on. And if you see me at a local event, I'm probably going to be playing some Cathedral Sanctifiers pretty soon. Other cards since our last podcast. Two more Miracles. Terminus. I like this card. I like this card a lot. It's 4 colorless, 2 white. Put all creatures on the bottom of their owner's libraries. But the best part, Miracle. 1 white. So it's a 1 white, basically Wrath. Granted, you know, in Legacy, people are going to be able to shuffle up their libraries, fetch land some stuff up, and they're probably going to be able to draw the creatures again. I don't think that that's where that, you know, that's going to be meaning that much. When you go and you need something like a Wrath, it's just get everything out of my face for right now so I can set up shop, and then I'll worry about it later. Something like in that Astral Slide deck that I tinker around with, I ran 4 Wrath main. I don't think I would go to a Terminus as much as it is really, really cool. With how much I dredge in that deck, I don't think that it's exactly where I want to be. But it's still, it could very well see its way into some control deck in Legacy. I wouldn't doubt it. Especially with all the manipulation with Brainstorm and Top. That card's pretty good. I wouldn't mind picking some up. Another card, another Miracle, was Entreat the Angels, which is XX and 3 white. Put 4/4 white angel creature tokens with flying onto the battlefield. And then Miracle is X and 2 white. And once again, granted, I don't see it sliding into anything right now, but it very well could be something that is playable. I mean, just for three white mana or 1 blue and 2 white, if you're miracling it, a 4/4 angel for 3, still pretty good. If you have 2 mana available and 2 white, so a total of 4 mana, 8 power, 1 card, 2 creatures, that card could be pretty darn good. I wouldn't doubt it if that thing shows up in something sooner or later. Another card that it's in that same sort of category is Restoration Angel. 3 colorless and a white. Flash. Flying. 3/4. But the big ability is, when it enters the battlefield, you may exile, target non-angel creature you control, then return that card to the battlefield under your control. And, you know, that could see play in something like a Death and Taxes type build. You know, chances are it probably doesn't, but that saving ability is rather valuable. The flash ability, of course, really, really good. I'm gonna, you know, you go and make awkward blocks. Your opponent doesn't know exactly what's coming, and then you Restoration Angel, you know, gain some value. Your creature comes right back. Who knows, maybe it was a Kitchen Finks or something. And gain some more life. Take that counter off another kind of like Astral Slide type card. Yes, I keep going back to that, but if Wizards is foreshadowing Astral Slide coming back, thank you, Wizards, because I really want to play it in Modern. But there's a lot of that sort of theme to white right now. I wouldn't doubt we see it in the near future. That's a card that's definitely not too broken for Modern, but I would definitely play it. So, I mean, I'm talking about Astral Slide. But I could even see playing that Angel card in that sort of deck as well. Now, I think the color that is going to see the most cards that have mass appeal to possibly play in Legacy would be blue. The reason I said mass appeal is because mass appeal is a card that I put on the list that I liked. Mass appeal is two colorless and a blue. Draw a card for each human you control. That card could really honestly see some play. There are a ridiculous number of humans being played in Legacy. Snapcaster Mage, Dark Confidant, things of the sort. Humans. They are humans. And you could definitely draw some cards off of Mass Appeal. I believe in Delver of Secrets. I believe he is a human as well before he goes and flips. So there's possibility that card... granted, really fringe. Really, really fringe. But still a rather cool card that I wouldn't mind jamming in some deck to try it out and see how that goes. Another miracle card that we got to see spoiled was Devastation Tide. Three colorless, two blue. Return all non-land permanents to the owner's hands. That's something that, like, Storm could set up a turn where it gets miracled for a colorless and a blue. Storm could definitely go and, you know, bounce all your crap back to your hand for a colorless and a blue. Granted, most of the time you're, like, Hercule's Recalling, basically, because that's the sort of card that you worry about with Storm. But it could also... It's a really great counterbalance trump, because the converted mana cost is still going to be 5 on the stack, even though you're playing it for a colorless and a blue. I could definitely see Devastation Tide in sideboard for Storm, especially like in a TES build, where you go and you could wish that. I mean, that's a heck of a card to wish for. If you could only... granted, it's going to go in your hand, but those decks still play Brainstorm, and you just go and set it up that the next turn, guess what I'm drawing? Devastation Tide. Bounce your crap, win the game. So I could definitely see that card seeing some play. Another card that I like to, once again, fringe sort of a card, though. Second Guess. Counter-target spell. That's the second spell cast this turn. It's an instant, and it's a colorless and a blue. With how many times multiple spells get played in a turn in Legacy, Second Guess could be a legit counterspell. Granted, it's not going to fight, you know, for room with something, say, like Spell Snare. You're probably going to play Spell Snare over it. But it's definitely something that is about as playable as Mana Leak. Not quite as playable. It could just be like a sideboard sort of card. It'd be great against like something like Storm. You know, stop that second ritual. Granted, a little bit more niche because it's the second spell cast. So, you know, somebody, if they know they're playing around it because they duress you, they're not going to play the meat and bones. But it's not a bad card. Definitely not the worst. It's probably not going to see any standard play. It's probably going to see zero Legacy play. But something I definitely liked. And then another card that I thought was rather interesting too was Outwit. Instant. One blue. Not one and a blue, just blue. Counter target spell that targets a player. I could see playing that against things like Hymn to Turok. Granted, there are other cards that you can use for that as well, too. And there's other cards you can use it against as well. You know, you can just go and counter a Lightning Bolt here or there. You know, I hate to say it, but real, real fringe card. The only card so far that I'm not saying is really, really fringe is Devastation Tide. That could legitimately see some Legacy play. But Outwit could, too. It all depends on how things break down and where the meta goes. And, you know, if everybody goes back to Hymn to Turok, I wouldn't mind having two or three of those in a sideboard, probably two, but you know, it's definitely a decent card, and the artwork's really, really cool on that card. That's a card that somebody's going to be collecting somewhere. Erica Yang did the artwork. I've never seen anything by her before, but that is a really, really cool looking card. And then Tamiyo, the Moon Sage, looking like she's from Kamigawa. Rather cool card. Planeswalker, 3 colorless, 2 blue. And she has a +1 of tap target permanent. It doesn't untap during controller's next untap step. -2 is draw a card for each tap creature target player controls. And then -8 is you get an emblem where you have no maximum hand size. And whenever a card is put in your graveyard from anywhere, you may return it to your hand. I don't see it, you know, getting to 8 a whole lot. But there are situational times where if you're going to pay 5, there's worse things to do than drawing a card for each tap creature that a target player controls. You know, especially against something like Elves, where you really need to dig. And they just had their, you know, their first Alpha Strike turn, where they tried to kill you and you somehow survived. And then you Tamiyo and, you know, maybe you Miracle some Terminus or something, I don't know, but definitely, you know, another neat card. I mean, anytime you see a Planeswalker, there's always that chance that it could do something rather busted in Legacy, and you have to also give it a little bit of consideration for that. Mist Hollow Griffin, that card could really easily see some play, in a Food Chain deck especially. You know, you go and make a crap ton of mana off of Mist Hollow Griffin, because it's 2 colorless, 2 blue. It's a creature Griffin flying, and you may cast Mist Hollow Griffin from exile. So you can go, that's a card you can play with Force of Will. Seems really, really fun, because you just go and you exile it to Force of Will, and then you go and you can still cast it later. It just sits there in exile zone, and you might just go, yep, cast it, win game possibly. The Food Chain interaction, though, is something where I see, you know, possibly some more value is Food Chain, if you're not familiar with it. 2 colorless and a green enchantment. Exile a creature you control. Add X mana of any color, any one color, to your mana pool, where X is the exiled creature's converted mana cost, +1. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells. So you can just go and keep naming blue, and keep on exiling, and keep on casting your Mist Hollow Griffin until you have 90 billion blue, until you can cast yourself an Emrakul, and then proceed to win the game. Food Chain is a legitimate, like, fringe deck. People play it. People have done well with it. I've definitely lost to it in a Grand Prix trial for Providence last year in the top 8 by Brian Koval was playing it. Brian Koval was playing it. Not Brian Kowal, but Brian Koval, level 2 or 3 judge from the area, from Pennsylvania, I should say. And he's rather well known in the judging community at the very least. And, you know, that deck was around long before Mist Hollow Griffin, but could definitely see more play with Mist Hollow Griffin. Rather cool card as well. Like that one a lot. And definitely will combo rather nicely with that. And that deck, you know, it popped down an Emrakul even in that version. Even easier now. Alright, on to red. Oh, man. Alright, that was my bad Evan Irwin impersonation. Reforge the Soul. That's right. Would you play this card? All right, I'm not going to go there. Reforge the Soul is 3 colorless and 2 red. And it's each player discards his or her hand and draws 7 cards. With a miracle of a colorless and a red. So you get Wheel of Fortune for a colorless and a red as long as it's your first card drawn that turn. Rather cool thing, especially if you go and you set it up for like a turn with like a Brainstorm or something on your opponent's turn. At end of turn maybe. Because you can still miracle, because it's not time restricted. But anyway, rather cool card. Could possibly see some play. I don't see anything that just gets wedged into, but still rather neat. Something that people are going to tink around with. You know, there's a reason that card is banned in Legacy, and Reforge the Soul. When I say that card, I mean Wheel of Fortune. Reforge the Soul could definitely fill that void if there's some deck out there that really, really benefits from it. I don't know if it does, but there might be. Another card that I liked was colorless and red, Dangerous Wager. Discard your hand, then draw 2 cards. I kind of like this if your hand is empty. Like, if you're playing something like Burn, there's not a whole lot of great draw spells. Faithless Looting's pretty good, but like people try to play things like Browbeat, and Browbeat never, ever, ever does what you want it to do, ever. Dangerous Wager certainly could, just because you're discarding your hand. Well, if that's the last card in your hand, guess what? You can still discard your hand. Just happen to have nothing in it. So for a colorless and a red, draw two cards, instant speed, not so bad. That card could see some play somewhere. I like the card. Might tinker around with it in something here or there, possibly throw in like one or two copies into burn and seeing where that goes. But that card's pretty darn cool, and it just might find a home. Now, here's a much, much debated card. Tybalt, the Fiend-Blooded. Flavor-wise, pretty cool-looking dude. Planeswalker, Tybalt. He comes in with two loyalty. His plus one is draw a card, then discard a card at random. He has a minus four. His minus four is Tybalt, the Fiend-Blooded, deals damage equal to the number of cards in target player's hand to that player. And its minus six is gain control of all creatures until end of turn. Untap them, they gain haste until end of turn, which is basically like an insurrection. This card could very well be good in Legacy too. You could see something with, you know, Life from the Loam Engine, you know, popping that down on turn two, and then turn three, you go and you play Loam, and then you get to right away discard a card or draw a card so you can dredge. So you throw three in your graveyard. You go and you grab your Life from the Loam. Yeah, you might discard it, but you also might get to cast it. And then you're in card advantage town, and Tybalt just keeps on doing that. And there's possible uses for that card. That card, I would not doubt seeing that card somewhere in a Legacy top 16 in the next 6 months. Maybe a year, maybe 2 years, maybe never. But I like the card. I think it's decent. It could find a home. Two cards then from green. Just two. Not a whole lot of green love here. The two cards being Descendant's Path and Revenge of the Hunted. Descendant's Path is a two colorless and a green enchantment. At the beginning of your upkeep, reveal the top card of your library. If it's a creature card that shares a type with a creature you control, you may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Otherwise, put that card on the bottom of your library. So this is obviously something where you're basically dedicating a deck to Descendant's Path. The plus side, though, is there's a thing called Changelings and Emrakul. And, you know, if you get to cast Emrakul off the top, that's cast. It does say cast right there. You may cast that card without paying its mana cost. So, extra turn. Annihilate your face. Kill you. It could be something. I would, on a scale of like 1 to 10 Legacy playable, it's probably a 2. I'm saying, and that's probably high. But there's a possibility that one's out there. Card's pretty cool. I wouldn't mind tinkering around with it, but I don't see myself doing anything with it personally. But there's somebody out there who's already building something. I guarantee it. And then Revenge of the Hunted is another miracle card. 4 colorless, 2 green sorcery. Until end of turn, target creature gains +6/+6 and trample, and all creatures able to block it do so. And it miracles in for 1 green. The only place where I could see that, it would be in some sort of Berserk deck. Those decks run rather low on mana. Play some Poison Dudes, Berserk it, maybe Revenge of the Hunted. I don't see it as a 4 of even in that deck, but you know, there's guys that play that deck. Now, if you're going to play that deck, you might just play Revenge of the Hunted. On a scale of 1 to 10, you know, it's probably a 3, probably a little bit more than Descendant's Path, just because it fits into an already out there deck. And the problem with it is that all creatures able to block it do so. Not so much of a problem when you're like putting on an Ink Moth Nexus. So there might not be a lot that's able to block it just yet. I mean, just Ink Moth Nexus, +6/+6, trample. If you have no block, 7 poison, 1 swing for, you know, 2 mana. Because you'd have to actually, you know, activate your Nexus to make it valid. But, you know, I could see that. It could happen. I wouldn't be happy when it happens to me, but it could definitely happen, unfortunately. And then black, we talked a little bit last week about Gristlebrand. Cool card. I've heard some rumblings. I really, really would like it if Jim Higginbottom was here right now to go over what he's playing in Providence. But I'm going to go and I'm going to spoil a little bit for him. I'm going to tell you right now, he's playing Grizzlebrand, and there's a way. I mean, granted, there's always a way. But that the turn he comes in, Jim could be drawing 7, 14, maybe 21 cards. Pretty cool. I don't know. I would really love to divulge his secrets, but it's not my place to do it. But I'm just saying, if somebody's drawing 21 cards, that game's probably over one way or the other. So Grizzlebrand, I would buy him. Buy him. Legacy playable, 9. 9, that card is bonkers. You land him, that game could be over. Those not familiar with Grizzlebrand, maybe you didn't listen last week and you decided to pick up some maintaining priority this week. Grizzlebrand, 4 colorless and 4 black, so we're talking 8 mana, which you're not playing that in Legacy. But he's flying, lifelink, but he has the activated ability of pay 7 life, draw 7 cards. Draw. Pretty darn cool. I definitely underestimated this card a whole lot, just thinking it's like a slightly less good Jinga Taxes. No, this guy's better. Maybe not in Reanimator, but there's a way that this guy's better. Trust me on that one. The only other black card that I saw that I liked was Descent into Madness. Black did not get any Miracle cards. We talked about that last time. Eric Pettinari said, I don't think Black's getting Miracle. I don't know where I read it. He was right. Black did not get Miracle. Black did get an enchantment. That's 3 colorless and 2 black. Descent into Madness. At the beginning of your upkeep, put a Despair counter on Descent into Madness. Then each player exiles X permanents he or she controls or cards from his or her hand, where X is the number of Despair counters on Descent into Madness. Now, do I see this as, oh my gosh, I have to play this card? No, but there could be a black control deck playing weird stuff like the Abyss or, you know, just weird things that could happen. I wouldn't at all be surprised to stare that down at some point in the next year. Do I see it likely? No. That's probably about a 3. There's going to definitely be somebody that tries to Dark Ritual that one out pretty quick. But you know, that was about all that I really liked out of Black. Once again, though, Grizzlebrand, busted. Buy him, get him, love him forever. He's probably going to be around for a while. Legendary creature, demon, you know, Crocus. Thank goodness. But they're still going to be drawing those cards. Anyway, like I said, and hopefully in 2 weeks, Jim will have top 8-ed or won Star City Games Providence, and we'll have him on, and we'll talk about how awesome Grizzlebrand is, and even if he scrubs out, we're going to have him on. We're going to talk about how awesome Grizzlebrand is, because that card is bonkers. And then we have the non-colored spells. Cavern of Souls. You've heard everybody complaining about it in Standard. People are probably going to complain about it in Legacy, too. It's just another card that beats up Uncontrolled. Luckily, dies to Wasteland. I mean, if there's any redeeming thing in Legacy that deals with that card is the fact that Wasteland spot up kills it. Granted, damage may be done. I hope it isn't. But damage may be done by that point. But Cavern of Souls could definitely see some Legacy play. It's probably like a 7 out of 10 for definitely seeing some Legacy play or definitely being really, really good in Legacy. That thing could be a 9. I hope it's not, but it could definitely be a 9. Also in the lands pack, Desolate Lighthouse. That card could possibly see some Legacy play. The loot ability on a land, pretty cool once again, but it's still wastelandable. It only adds colorless mana. So, but you never know. And Alchemist Refuge, another land, green and a blue. It may cast non-land cards as though they had flash. You can flash in a choke at the end of your turn. Gotcha. You know, who knows? But it's non-land cards, so even enchantments, you know, get some flash time for green and a blue and, you know, tapping that land. And granted, that's like 6 mana to do that with choke, but it could happen. I wouldn't completely doubt it. I would definitely put that on like the 1-2 Legacy playable scale, but it's there. There's a possibility. And then there was one multicolored creature, which is the Sigarda Loss or Host of Herons, flying, hexproof, spells and abilities your opponent control that cause you to sacrifice permanents. Can't cause you to sacrifice permanents. So, you know, no more innocent bloods or things like that. Just can't happen. Sorry. And I'm 5/5 flying hexproof. good luck dealing with me. So, like, for 2 colorless, a green, and 2 white, grant, once again, a lot of mana, 5 mana, but it would be really, really hard to deal with. I wouldn't doubt, like, some sort of Bant Shell, possibly throwing 1 copy or, you know, in there. Hexproof Flying, 5/5, so he does a lot of business. You know, 4 swings, you're dead. Unless, of course, you're staring down Gristlebrand, getcha. Anyway, that card could definitely see some play. I would put that more in, like, the 5 out of 10 scale. I should have went and did a scale throughout. But I am no Luis Scott Vargas. And I'm probably wrong, but you're listening, so how wrong does that make you? Anyway, I did want to go over Jim's new Legacy deck, but that's not happening without Jim on here. A couple other neat little things that we saw this week is that the fact that Cube is returning. Cube will be upon us before we talk again, before there's another Maintaining Priority, episode number 3, hopefully, where I'm not maintaining priority the entire time. We get some, you know, we get Brian Thomas back, get Eric Pettinari back, get Jim Higginbottom on, get Joey Manor on, possibly, depending if one of those other guys cancels like this time. So that was really cool. We're also in the midst of Channel Fireball's Cube Week right now, where they have a rather low-priced offer on their sleeves. They don't sponsor me, but they certainly could. Let me know. Anyway, and they had, you know, all their main guys doing their Cube Draft videos, which was really, really cool to watch. And the funny thing, my observation, Tom Martell drafts Cube the way that I would think the Conley Woods would draft Cube. Man, does that guy draft some weird crap. I mean, just like, wow. Like, oh, yeah, I'm going to play all 5 colors. It's going to take all these fetch lands and dual lands, and I'm just going to, oh, I'll play all these draft leavens, whatever I get on, like, you know, pick 8. wow, that guy plays some out-there crap in Cube, and, you know, I would be the guy that would be sitting on the other end of it going, are you freaking kidding me? He's really playing that? But, yeah. He's playing that. And, you know, the funny thing is Conley drafts the way I would think someone like, you know, Tom Martell or anybody reasonable. He drafts reasonable. This is the guy that has the out there constructed decks. I don't know. Rather neat. Definitely fun to see. It was definitely funny when Tom's like, all right, this time I'm going to force the red aggressive deck. I'm going to take Searing Blaze. Pick 1. Pick 2. All right, it all fell apart. Let's go and draft some Mono Dirtle control. Like, oh my gosh, Tom, what are you doing? What on earth are you doing? Anyway, so better him than me. I draft, like, mono color decks that I can't even get to come together. That guy's playing every color under the sun and still manages a way to win. Then again, when people scooped you on, like, turn 4, it's also pretty nice, too, especially when you're under, when you're doing a draft video. Yeah, just scooped you. All right. Well, I have no idea how much time I have in right now, but I'm going to guess I'm probably close to an hour in all by myself here, maintaining my priority throughout. In closing, let's see. Shout-outs. Shout-out to me for doing this whole thing by myself. Shout-out to MTGCast.com for hosting our podcast and hopefully putting this up there, even though I'm going holding the fort down all by myself. Shout out to Brian. Hope you feel better. Shout out to Jim. Get on here. Explain your deck. Go win some Star City Games Providence Legacy Open. I don't know what you're doing with Standard. You're probably working Saturday or something. And then shout out to Eric Pettinari for playing League of Legends. Granted, he had a tournament and whatever. And we did it last time on a Wednesday, and this time I'm recording on a Thursday. But get back on here. Keep me entertained and give me somebody else to talk to so I don't have to go on and on about awful Legacy fringe playable cards. And that's pretty much it. I'm going to wrap it up right now. Once again, we have no sponsor, but if anybody would like to, please get in touch with me. My name is Joe Marucci. I'm at Joe Marucci on Twitter. That's JoeMarucci. Joe Marucci on Twitter. You can find that information on MTGCast if you're looking at us through there. Also Joe Marucci on Facebook, Joe Marucci pretty much everywhere. If you can find me, I'm out there. I'm Vesper Ghoul here and there, MTG, The Source, Vesper Ghoul on there. I own the art for it and yada, yada, yada. Horrible card from Dissension. I don't even want to explain it to you. It's like the worst Birds of Paradise ever, but no flying, 1/1. Anyway. So once again, it's Maintaining Priority, episode number 2. If you're still listening, thanks a lot for listening. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Maintaining Priority can be reached directly on Twitter at notpassingagain, at is at notpassing, and the email address is maintainingpriority@gmail.com. Gee, this is easy. Maybe next week I will join the show. At least, I show up.